Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Good afternoon. My name's Louise Johnson. I'm the CEO of Fuse, which is the global sport and entertainment agency, and welcome to the innovation stage. Today, we're going to be talking about the incredible summer of sport that we've got coming up and entertainment, and how advertisers are using partnerships to really connect to culture and build trust. And I'm delighted today to have three of our valued clients with us to talk about how they are investing in these partnerships and what it's doing for their brand from a creative point of view and obviously to their brand and business. So please welcome Lisa Walker, who is head of media and sponsorship at Vodafone, Adam Warner, who's Global Head of Sponsorship and Partnerships at PepsiCo, and Andy Freeman from British Gas, Marketing Director of British Gas. So before we get into it, now, one of the questions I really want to ask and that the audience would like to know is, you know, obviously you guys invest in some of the biggest partnerships across the summer, Glastonbury, the Olympics, Paralympics, Champions League, Women's Champions League. Just to give the audience a little bit of context about why you're in these partnerships and you know, what's the reason why you've invested in it. So Lisa, coming to you first, obviously Vodafone used to be in a huge amount of global partnerships, came out of that, but then from a UK perspective, you've reinvested from 2021 onwards. So I'd just love to hear a bit about why now?
Why now? Well, I guess Vodafone's got a rich heritage of investing in sponsorship, as you said, Formula One, Man United, England cricket team. So there were some massive properties that were synonymous with Vodafone back in the 90s, early 2000s. And I think the reality is Vodafone had to pull out those sponsors, probably didn't want to. You know, they had to at a time when I guess the telco sector was changing, competitor set was changing, the market was more challenging, and unfortunately Vodafone had to de-invest. But it was definitely a hole in our marketing strategy. We knew that, I knew that, especially within our sector, sponsorship is a big part of, I guess, the kind of, you know, the marketing levers that we pull. And that was definitely a miss for Vodafone. We know from all of our brand tracking, going back, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, that sponsorship really does almost over-index in helping define your brand and give your brand emotional value and personality. That was very clear from the Vodafone of the 90s. That was missing. And I just needed to bide my time to the point where we felt, yes, we actually can, you know, financially, we can justify this. The business case is there. The value is there. The right partner is there. And I guess that's what helped me then get it over the line in 2021.
Fantastic. And Adam, you know, obviously PepsiCo has had sport and entertainment sort of, you know, entwined in their DNA for, you know, 30, 40 years, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. And you guys are, you know, incredible at bringing those two together and some very exciting news that landed at 12 o'clock today. Can you just tell me a little bit about why it is so important to Pepsi and PepsiCo?
Yeah, Lou, and to the audience, I mean, hopefully you guys recognise that sport sponsorship is pretty hardwired into PepsiCo brands, or that's Pepsi, Lay's, Gatorade, right? It's we've been pretty entrenched in it for decades. Albeit, I think our level of investment is accelerated, particularly in the international business versus our US domestic business, where we've probably had more historical investment. I guess the reason we're in it is we've got a bit of a model that we think about it. It's the three R's. So the first one is relevance. So, you know, fundamentally, partnership, sponsorship is about tapping into passion points, right? The stuff that humans, people, us, really, really care about, like genuinely care about, the stuff we like choose to lean into, you know, and access on a, you know, high frequency, you know, day to day. So that relevance is, I'd say, number one, I guess, driver. Secondly, reach. You know, these partnerships give us either massive scale mainstream reach with, I guess, key sort of anchor points in the year where big events are happening, and or they give us access to, I guess, harder to reach audiences. So a good example of a new partnership for us in recent years is a partnership with EAFC. It used to be called FIFA. It's one of the biggest video games in the world. Clearly, that gives us access to a harder to reach younger cohort, which maybe we wouldn't be able to reach via traditional media. And then the third R is returns. So, you know, when you do these things right, and it's not easy to do these things right, we think we can get really strong returns, either from a commercial, you know, financial perspective and or from a brand perspective. So they're really the three reasons we're in it. We invest heavily and we'll continue to do so if we can, you know, maintain the discipline.
Right. And Andy, from your perspective, your business has obviously gone through quite a lot of change over the last 2 years. And now you sort of decided to turn sponsorship back on after, I think, a 10-year absence. So again, why now?
Look, we've got a big brand. It's a strong brand. We're in one in three homes, but I think everyone is acutely aware of the last couple of years, energy crisis, cost of living crisis. We can't rely on our heritage, you know, 200-year-old brand, but actually looking forward, how do we create meaning and difference in what's quite a complex category, a category that's undergoing a huge amount of change? When I came in from Santander, former colleague in the room, you know, sponsorship is hardwired into that organization. Yeah. It was something that I wanted to do. It was really about finding the right time and the right properties. And with sports, which you've chosen, sports in terms of national institutions, you know, we're not going to kind of pin ourselves to one team. And then, of course, if you look at Team GB and Paralympic GB, incredible amounts of trust in that IP, and we're looking to leverage that trust to kind of build meaning and difference in our brand.
So just getting a bit more into the specific properties that you have, and obviously Team GB, I was going to say, why, what strategic value does that bring? But running up into the Olympics, that strategic value is the trust that you will get from those properties.
Yeah, I mean, Team GB is the most trusted sports team in the UK. Outside of sport, it's, you know, it's most loved institution behind the NHS. So like it's right up there with something that really means like something for people in the UK, and kind of tapping into that. And then of course we've extended that through talent, of course, that we've partnered with as part of that partnership. It just helps us to reach and connect with people in a way that we've not done for the last few years.
Right. And moving back to you, Lisa, yes, as well, obviously a long heritage in sport at Vodafone, but actually now you're into music in quite a big way, Glastonbury being, you know, a big highlight of your year last year as you move into year two. Just a little bit about why Glastonbury?
Why Glastonbury? Yeah. Well, why not?
True.
I guess, you know, we actually started sponsoring music festivals in 2022 with British Summertime, Kendall Calling, Mighty Hoopla. So we were starting to build a music portfolio. But it was, you know, I was always very conscious of the fact that we can't have the most festivals. It's very hard to outplay O2 that obviously have the big, big venue portfolio. But what we could potentially do is get the best festival, absolutely, you know, from a music point of view, probably, you know, the best property in the world, which is Glastonbury. Just needed to bide my time and in fact, seize the moment when they were open to change, because obviously he had sponsored Glastonbury for 19 years. And I guess Glastonbury is important to us because, you know, Vodafone is a big heritage brand. It's one of the most valuable brands in the UK. It's certainly the oldest brand within the, you know, mobile telephony space. And, you know, what we need is to align with other brands of equal value and significance in terms of British heritage and value in terms of British culture. Wimbledon does that for us, but most definitely Glastonbury does from a music point of view. So it was the perfect marriage, I guess, of our brand with theirs.
Yeah. And Adam, obviously Lisa's been in partnerships for a couple of years. Andy's, you know, this is the first year. PepsiCo have been in Champions League since 2015, so a really long time, which is incredible. What's the key components of, you know, keeping it relevant and fit for purpose with that particular property as well?
There's a lot. I could probably talk about that topic for hours, but to try and distill it down, I'd say number one, I think to think about these things truly as a partnership. I mean, sponsorship is the label, I guess, for this sort of space within the industry. I hate the term sponsorship personally. I think it's outdated. I think it denotes a sort of one-way transfer of value between parties. So I think thinking partnership, strategic partnership, I think is what we do and what I think the industry needs to do more about. If you think in that way, right, you nurture partnerships. You know, it's not just about, you know, it's not just about a single year, a single chapter. You know, you're going through, you're going on a journey. And that we've certainly been on a journey with UEFA Champions League. So partnership, really investing in that, critical. Number two, the people. From two angles, right? One, your team and your extended team, your agencies you have working on it, right? I mean, it it might sound obvious, but they're absolutely critical to the success, right? These things, you don't get returns just by switching on the sponsorship and expecting it to pay back, right? You've really got to invest in it. You've got to have the right people around it. You've got to find the right mix of continuity and refreshment in your team, right? You need the continuity for the partnerships, but you need that refreshment to bring the creativity, you know, to it on a, you know, a continuous basis. And then I think the third thing is creativity, right? I mean, creativity is the multiplier. You know, like, I think many brands go into sponsorship and, if I'm quite honest, I think they're a bit lazy. I think they just expect it to return by whacking their logo on a perimeter board or on a TV ident, right? You've got to throw creativity into it. And creativity ultimately will be the difference between getting good returns or getting great returns. So I think they're the things which has allowed us to, you know, to go nearly now to 10 years and beyond.
I think I'm just going to jump on the creativity point, because obviously we're at Advent Europe, lots of people have been talking about creativity, and you know, we know, because it is a really busy summer of sport and entertainment, you have got to cut, you know, rise above all the competitive set with your creative, coupled with the fact that we've done some work with System One, the effectiveness agency, to say, look, you know, when you use sports assets and IP into creative, you get a much bigger happiness score, which ultimately drives better benefits and rewards. And Andy, obviously, sort of first year of partnerships, but you have done this amazing ad that we've seen with the Olympians. I know it's a bit early days, but can you just tell us a bit, like, you know, how have you been using those? What value have you been seeing? It might be too early to tell, but why is that important to you in terms of having a real creative use of those sponsorship assets and IP?
Yeah, sure. Look, we're really happy with what we're seeing. Of course, after not being in partnerships, totally agree with you on that, created a team called Strategic Brand Partnerships, not sponsorships.
Like it.
You know, after not being in that space for 10 years, you know, after the second week, you've got CFOs and MDs saying, you know, we've got more customers yet. And so it's very much a journey that we're going on. I think we're seeing from that first burst of activity, like, really strong results in terms of the key brand metrics that we're tracking. As you say, it's very early days, but kind of from our point of view, we can see kind of the direct correlation between everything that we went into these partnerships to do and then what it's doing for us. But also, it's not just about your customer comms as well. We've got 21,000 colleagues, you know, particularly with Team GB, Paralympics GB. How do we partner with those to kind of create a performance mindset within our business? And that's equally as important as part of this program. You know, the amount of pride across the Centrica workforce for having these partnerships in sport is absolutely incredible. And that's something that we're tracking, like, really, really closely, just that, you know, whether it's engagement rates, whether it's a real pivot to a performance culture in the organization, that's just as important as the stuff that you see on the outside as well.
That's great. Can I build on that point that Adam was making around partnerships, not sponsorships? I think that's really important. And what we like to talk about is the fact that sponsorship needs to work in service of the brand. Brands can't work in service of sponsorship. Because if you don't have a central role for your brand with that partner, you don't have stories to tell. So that is really important. What is the role that your brand can play that enhances that fan's experience of that property? If there's no role that you can play, it's much harder to become a partner in storytelling and do more than just, I guess, badge that property.
Yeah. And you've done a lot around connectivity and connecting brands.
Yes, absolutely. So obviously, you know, Vodafone's business is connectivity. It's building the network. It's aiding communication, but it's also allowing people to get closer to the things they love. So a good example would be Glastonbury, where, you know, it's very hard to enjoy a festival without being connected, without that network showing up and delivering for you, without the app that, in the case of Glastonbury, we build working and delivering what it needs to. It's, you know, we deliver connectivity for the production teams that make Glastonbury happen. So from that point of view, then it's really easy to build activation, to build stories, to build services on the ground. I think that's when you're trying to find partners or the property or the IP that fits naturally with your brand. It's about kind of thinking about where can you show up, how can you show up, and how can you therefore build stories and arguably a legitimate right to be there for the fans of that IP.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think I'm also, Lisa, just staying with you for a bit and talking about storytelling as well. You know, we tested your ad with Alfie and the two disabled tennis players, and that was the strongest ad, I think, that you had done
correct
last year. So it's also about using the connectivity story to tell human stories as well.
Yeah, so the our TV ad last year was all based around, obviously, Arthur Hewitt and Gordon Reid, who are our wheelchair tennis champions. The TV ad really was telling their story of how they've become the champions they are, aided by the people around them that they connect to. You know, it's that text message or that, you know, WhatsApp just before they go on court or just when they've finished. And it's the people around them that help them be the champions they are. So that was the role that they played within our ad. But the ad was ultimately, it was about Alfie and Gordon, but it was also about the network and the role the network plays in connecting people. So in theory, that, you know, that ad resonated because it wasn't just about tennis champions, but it was about something that everyone can relate to.
And Adam, obviously, you know, PepsiCo have used talent in your creative and advertising for a very, very long time, so it works.
Thanks too.
But also, over the last couple of years, you have increased the amount of female talent from women footballers to various different music acts as well. What's been that shift in using female talent? It's great, obviously, being a female, and so it should be. But again, the effectiveness, it's working as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a long-standing commitment to gender equity in sport, right? I mean, if you go back to 1997, we put Mia Hamm, pretty famous American female footballer or soccer player, as the guys over there would say, in an ad next to Michael Jordan, right? So it's I think we're proud of the length of commitment we've had in that space. But we're also very energized, right? I mean, there has just been a broader societal shift, right, in this space for the good, which we're all, I think, very energized about, which has, I think, accelerated the broader sort of industry focus on this space. And, we've led into that. We were the first UEFA Men's Champions League sponsor to step into UEFA Women's Football Sponsorship. So I think that was a good statement. As you've mentioned, Lou, we've put in female athletes alongside our big, male athletes. You know, in our advertising, we're doing specific, bespoke storytelling around female athletes, right? It's not always, we play it differently at different times. And we have this one game mindset to how we approach things, right? So if we're going to sponsor Man City Football Club, we're going to sponsor the female team. We're going to sponsor Wrexham Football Club, which we announced a few weeks ago, we'll do it to the female team as well, right? So I think that's it's a pretty underlying principle to how we think about things. And we've got some pretty exciting stuff coming up. It's the Women's Champions League final in Bilbao in Spain in a couple of weekends' time. We've got some big plans around that. And then the Men's Champions League final is actually here in London, a week later. So yeah, it's of growing importance to us. And yeah, we're definitely putting big focus on it.
Yeah. And also sort of merging sport and entertainment together as well. Like obviously, you've announced a sort of big talent that will be playing at Wembley in a couple of weeks.
Indeed, yeah. So only, I think, 12 o'clock today. So we sponsor, I don't like that, I shouldn't use that word, should I? we sponsor the kickoff show, which is the music performance ahead of the Men's Champions League final. We announced Lenny Kravitz at 12 o'clock today. So if you go onto our social channels, you'll see some pretty cool content announcing that today. So proud of that one.
Right. Moving on to the final section. Now, of course, there's a reason why we do this. It's about, driving business and brand. And I just want to talk a little bit about the effectiveness and business impact, because, of course, it's an investment that needs to be justified and measured constantly as well in the short and long term. And Andy obviously did a lot in Santander. And I know, obviously, again, it's still early days with British Gas, and we're looking forward to seeing the results after the Olympics and the Paralympics. But again, just to get your thoughts on what are you really focusing on in terms of those metrics and what are you sort of hoping to achieve from it?
Yeah, sure. I think, look, at a brand level, it's trust. There's some of the kind of key drivers that we're looking at. Clearly across our businesses, we're looking to drive growth. Less of a KPI, but I guess building on Adam's point, as a large employer, we've got a responsibility to drive change. And so, if we partner with Team GB, it's going to be Paralympics GB. If we partner with the Scottish FA for the men's, it's going to be the women's as well, and really trying to champion underheard voices, and so at the heart of, whilst I've talked about everything that you see in communications and then with our colleagues, there's a whole other work stream, which is probably where I'm most interested, which is all the things that we're doing in communities. And so with Teen GB, we've got a schools program going into a million schools to teach and educate about the energy transition. You know, we're running football camps for underprivileged children in Scotland. We're doing para football festivals, really trying to elevate the women's game for football and rugby in Scotland. And then, of course, the stuff that's really much closer to what we do as a business. And so if we take Murrayfield, you know, famous stadium in Scotland, really creating the blueprint for energy transition there, and then how that flows through. And so we're really trying to use the partnership for kind of everything that can do for our colleagues, everything can do for our brand at both a brand level and a growth level. But then also, you know, we're in one in three homes, we're kind of across every corner of the UK, and then how can we really kind of give back to those communities, but in a way that is hopefully a bit different, kind of really means something and matters and kind of creates that distinction that we're trying to do as a brand.
We were also talking a little bit yesterday about sort of creating that legacy, wasn't it? That real impact and legacy for the future as well with your partnership.
Yeah, totally. I couldn't agree more. And when we went into this and we, you know, we did a lot of work, we picked sport as a territory. I've talked about national institutions. As soon as we went into a room and Mike told us, started talking about, you know, deals and you'll pay us this and you'll get this access and this perimeter board, we've sort of politely walked out. Like, it's true partnership because we want to create legacy, like both sides as well. So
Great. Adam, obviously your UEFA deal as well allows you to operate across, well, originally sort of six brands, now four brands. How is that working? So obviously you've got different business KPIs and impact for each three brands. How does that work? It's obviously a lot to manage, but can you just talk us through a little bit around the difference and what you're measuring on each one?
Yeah, there's a lot to manage for sure. I mean, I'd say that there's some commonalities in the objectives we're trying to drive across the brands. You can, if you think about Pepsi and Lay's, right, are very much central to the social watching occasion, right? You can imagine driving penetration occasion for those brands is going to be a key KPI. If you think about Gatorade, right, we're trying to drive penetration around sort of athletic on the field moments. But I think where it becomes different and we pull it apart, right, and I think Andy, you know, touched on this, is like there is a critical need to be distinctive, right? And I think Lisa also touched on this. You've got to do it to the service of the brand. And that's why, in terms of predominantly how our brands show up in the context of these platforms, is in a very brand-centric, distinctive way. So on Lay's, we've got an amazing program called Lay's Replay. We reuse chip packets. We turn that into artificial football pitches in disadvantaged communities around the world. A great program. We're opening the 11th pitch in a few weeks' time. On Pepsi, we touched upon the kickoff show, right? Fusing music and entertainment in a very Pepsi way, very true to Pepsi's DNA and, you know, its history. And on Gatorade, we've got a program called 5v5. It's the biggest grassroots football program on the planet. 5v5 soccer tournament takes place in 20 to 30 countries around the world and then culminates in the winners basically playing at the UEFA Champions League finals, right? Giving them that real sort of real, moment of fame, but, you know, fundamentally tackling the dropout that we see with young people sometimes in sport. We know the benefits that sport can bring, right? If we can help, I guess, stop that leaky bucket of dropout, then that's very true to our core values from a Gatorade perspective and having a greater good.
Okay. And Lisa, slightly different. When you've got Glastonbury and Wimbledon as well, which you partner with, they're obviously clean environments.
Yeah.
So how do you measure the short and the long-term impact of those two properties?
Well, I'm going to sound like the hard-nosed business lady now, because, you know, I look after sponsorship and media, and, you know, I have to decide where I'm going to spend my money. I can't tap into a secret budget for sponsorship. That doesn't exist. You know, we spend more on sponsorship, we spend less on advertising. That's kind of how it works. So obviously I had to write the business case to, first of all, get sign off for us to enter our first sponsorship agreements. And that had to be done without much of a, you know, of much evidence in terms of tangible results. But I've always felt I need to be able to sit sponsorship alongside traditional advertising, and they need to kind of and give some comparable results. So there is some, you know, so we measure them the same way, obviously. Is that me? So we have brand tracking, and we have dedicated sponsorship tracking, so we can dive into those fan audiences for our different properties and measure the disproportionate incremental consideration that those communities, those fans, experience because we're associating with, you know, the thing that they're passionate about. but we also put our sponsorship properties into our econometrics. So we're measuring all of the sort of paid, owned, earned both investment and results for our sponsorship properties alongside our advertising. And I think that's, you know, I had to obviously sell sponsorship in on trust to start with. You know, and obviously there's lots of industry level evidence in terms of the impact that sponsorship has on certainly on emotional connection with brands and therefore brand consideration uplift and therefore long-term brand health. But at the end of the day, we also have to, in our case, sell contracts. So I had to be able to say, okay, short-term, this is what sponsorship does. Long-term, this is what it does. Obviously, it just, the return is greater in the long-term. It's greater than most, you know, a lot of media investment, with the exception of things like above the line advertising. But I had to be able to show a comparable result. So we've built sponsorship into our econometrics, and thankfully it is doing what we had promised the business it would do.
Fantastic. And I think you can obviously submit questions on Slido. In the meantime, while maybe some questions come up, I'm just going to ask the panel one question. Obviously, lots of brands and advertisers are in the audience today. For those that are thinking about going into partnerships, because obviously it's an incredible way to connect with culture, drive effectiveness, could you just give like maybe one tip of advice to the audience today on, if they're thinking about it, how to make that leap? I'll go with you first.
I would say, you know, think about the emotional value you're trying to build for your brand. Think about what is likely to resonate with your natural customer base, but then also the properties that you potentially want to partner with. You know, where is the natural affiliation? Where is the moment of crossover? Where can you and how can you build stories? And therefore, how can you build a legitimate right to be there? And an ability to service the fans of that property naturally, so that it feels like a natural fit.
Right, Adam.
I guess building on Lisa, right? I think you need strategic clarity. Don't rush it, because like if you really, you know, it's this partnership. It is tends to be long term, right? So you don't want to be winding yourself out of it after a year or two when you realize you didn't have the strategic clarity, and that didn't lead to the right, you know, long-term investment decision. So don't rush it, have the strategic clarity, and I think that's a key enabler to success.
Andy, any words of wisdom?
I mean, partnership, right? That has to be at the heart of it. Don't rush into it. I took 3 years. Probably in those 3 years, my CEO sent me 25 partnerships that he thought we might do. I think you've got to be really patient, find the right things, because you are probably in it for at least 3 to 5 years. And then the final thing I'd say is it's got to be a two-way fit. So kind of what's the value you can get, what's the value they can get, and then what's the legacy that you can create together.
Fantastic. Okay, well, listen, I wish you all the best for the coming summer of entertainment, sport, and a huge amount of events that are coming up. And thank you so much. I know you're busy people. So thank you so much for joining us on the stage to talk about, you know, how partnerships can affect business trust, effectiveness, and obviously brand and business impact. So a huge thank you to the panel.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek, and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.